Today's Friday, October 29th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden begins Europe visit amid tensions at home and abroad.
With Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin not attending in person, an opportunity for U.S. President Joe Biden, said National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
Plus, Russia warns Turkey over arms sales to Ukraine.
A Kremlin spokesman has warned that Turkey's ongoing arms sales to Ukraine threaten to destabilize the region.
Also, Hague Tribunal working to get justice for murdered journalists. Our top story today is in Rome. The global economy is giving leaders of the group of 20 countries a lot to talk about at their summit this weekend in Rome. The presidents and prime ministers representing 80% of the global economy will confront a recovery hampered by an energy crunch that's spurring higher fuel and utility prices, new COVID-19 outbreaks, and jammed supply chains. U.S. President Joe Biden has said he wants to press other leaders on high oil prices. One thing he said, leaders will sign off on a deal to enact a global minimum corporate tax that would help reap more money for governments that have increased spending on pandemic relief. U.S. President Joe Biden left Washington Thursday to attend the G20 Leaders Summit in Rome and then continue to the United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP26, in Glasgow, Scotland. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Witas-Guara is traveling with the president and has this report on the key issues leaders will discuss.
Preparations are underway in Rome, where G20 Leaders Summit will be held. With Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin not attending in person, an opportunity for U.S. President Joe Biden, said National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan earlier this week.
The U.S. and Europe will be there. They'll be there energized and united at both the G20 and COP26, driving the agenda.
But it won't be easy. Biden must repair U.S. credibility following the messy military withdrawal from Afghanistan and rift with Paris over the AUKUS deal that scuttled a French submarine contract with Australia. Leslie Benjamori, director of the U.S. and the Americas program at Chatham House, via Skype.
It is about rebuilding transatlantic partnership after a very difficult August with the exit from Afghanistan and the European reaction to that. But it is then about concrete issues. So climate, the global minimum corporate tax agreement, and then debt restructuring is really important.
Biden will emphasize his pledge to cut greenhouse gas emissions to about 50% below 2005 levels by 2030. But U.S. global leadership on the issue also depends on Biden's domestic climate agenda in his infrastructure and social spending bills currently struggling in Congress. Matthew Goodman, Senior Vice President for Economics at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said via Skype.
The president, unfortunately, is not going to be in the same strong position he would have been to push other countries to make further, more ambitious commitments on climate.
Phasing out coal is a key contention, as is the pledge by rich nations to provide $100 billion a year in climate financing to help developing countries reduce emissions and mitigate the impacts of climate change. Chinese Vice Minister of Ecology and Environment, Ye Min.
In the context of the official implementation of the Paris Agreement, these issues will affect political mutual trust and the ability of developing countries to take climate-related actions.
On the pandemic front, humanitarian organizations say wealthy countries failed to fulfill pledges made at last year's G20 to ensure global vaccine access, instead hoarding hundreds of millions of doses for their own populations. Natalie Arnoux, head of regional advocacy at Médecins Sans Frontières Access Campaign, via Skype.
What we would like to see is them to clearly set up a schedule to provide these doses to COVAX for the countries in a transparent way with a very clear timetable.
Biden, a devout Catholic, will meet with Pope Francis at the Vatican on Friday prior to the G20 and COP26. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
President Joe Biden on Friday opened his five-day European trip at the Vatican. He and Pope Francis, the world's two most prominent Roman Catholics, held what was being described as an unusual long meeting of an hour and 15 minutes. A White House statement afterwards said Biden thanked the Pope for his advocacy for the world's poor and his leadership on issues such as climate change and COVID-19 vaccine access for developing nations. This statement did not mention abortion. Some political analysts say President Biden's support for abortion rights might be a source of tension with the Pope. For more on the visit, I spoke with VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Witas-Guara, who is traveling with the president.
This is the one issue that the Pope and the President does not agree on, is on the issue of abortion. However, on aboard Air Force One, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told me and the other reporters there that there are many other issues of cooperation between the two leaders, including on climate and also on working together to achieve a more equal and just world. So, you know, this is something that the White House keeps on stressing whenever they are asked about the issue of abortion, including whether or not the president will accept communion from or will be given communion from the Pope. This is something that I asked Corinne Jean-Pierre. This is the principal deputy press secretary. She was also traveling aboard Air Force One. She declined to say, essentially, because she said that communion and religion is something very personal. The president's faith is something very personal to him.
As the G20 begins, all eyes will be on President Biden and President Emmanuel Macron of France, especially after the misunderstanding of the submarine deal and a few other issues that has rankled relations between Washington and Paris.
So the two leaders is scheduled to meet in a couple of hours, and this will be the first in meeting person since, as you said, this crisis of trust issue, as the French have declared it, over the US and the UK secret submarine deal with Australia, which essentially scuttled France's own agreement to supply submarines to Australia. So this is something that will be very interesting to watch. A lot of body language will be observed here to see how the two leaders, whether or not they have mended this rough patch that went on in August, and whether they'll be able to move forward as strong transnational allies.
President Biden is in Europe, but there are domestic issues that are trailing him as he travels. He was hoping for a passage of his bipartisan bill, but that's not happening. Will that dampen his willingness to engage with European partners?
The president stayed behind longer than he had originally scheduled for in Washington, D.C. It was about 5 hours late to leave for Europe. That's why we got here in Rome at very early hours in the morning, because the president wanted to go to Congress to speak to his Democratic caucus to convince them to pass the two bills, the infrastructure bill and then the other bill that's called the Build Back Better, or what the White House likes to call the human infrastructure bill, everything from climate change to child care and elder care and family paid leave and so on. Obviously, this did not happen. The House did not call in a vote for both the infrastructure bills as well as the other bill because they simply didn't have the numbers to get it passed. And this all happened while we were on the air. So during our flight on Air Force One, we can see CNN on the cabin saying that House is not taking the vote, in a blow to President Biden. So obviously the president was updated as well on that issue. But when we asked officials aboard Air Force One whether this will somewhat dampen his agenda, his climate agenda, particularly as he goes towards the G20 and the COP26 in Glasgow in a couple of days, they were very adamant in saying that world leaders know that whether or not there is a vote, they know that President Biden is serious in terms of climate change, in terms of delivering a strong message on everything from COVID and Build Back Better World. So they're trying to play it down as something that will not dampen the strong message that President Biden is trying to deliver on the world stage.
That's VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Guidas-Cuara speaking with me from Rome. The top U.S. representative in Taiwan, Sandra Whitcock, said on Friday that the United States is committed to helping Taiwan defend itself amid heightened tensions with Taipei and Beijing. Wayan Chang of Reuters reports.
Washington's top diplomat in Taipei said on Friday the U.S. is committed to bolstering Taiwan's ability to defend itself. Sandra Utkirk, who heads the de facto U.S. embassy in Taiwan, said that in the first news briefing since she took her post in July.
So the United States has a commitment to help Taiwan provide for itself self-defense. And that's part of the Taiwan Relations Act. It's a commitment we take very seriously. Our commitment to Taiwan is rock solid and contributes to the maintenance of peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait and within the region.
Tense cross-strait tensions and the surge of Chinese military jets into Taiwan's air defense zone set off alarms that Beijing could try bolder moves to bring in what it views as a rogue province under its control. Chinese President Xi Jinping pledged peaceful reunification in a key speech on October 8th, but did not rule out military options. Washington has long followed a policy of strategic ambiguity on the question of military intervention in the event of a Chinese attack. But there have been clearer signs of U.S.-Taiwan relations warming. Utkirk's remarks came after Taiwanese leader Tsai Ing-wen told CNN that a small team of U.S. soldiers are on the democratically ruled island to provide support and training to local troops. While the United States, like most countries, has no formal ties with the Chinese-claimed island, it is its most important international backer and main arms supplier. President Joe Biden's administration has moved to restate that support to the anger of Beijing.
That's Ryan Chang of Reuters. Russia is warning Turkey over arms sales to Ukraine after a Turkish-made drone was used to attack Russian-backed rebels in Ukraine. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
A Kremlin spokesman has warned that Turkey's ongoing arms sales to Ukraine threaten to destabilize the region. The warning follows Kiev's release of a video Tuesday showing a Turkish-made drone used for the first time against Russian-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine. Independent defense analyst Ardar Mevlutoglu says Kiev sees the Turkish drones as a potential game-changer in its fight against separatists, which it has been battling since 2014.
A single armed drone equipped with a couple of bombs may destroy a whole air defense battery or a very expensive electronic warfare system or take out some armored vehicles, etc. So that asymmetry provides some capability for those armies that are facing significant threats such as Ukraine.
Kiev has purchased several Turkish drones and this month announced an agreement to build more in Ukraine itself. A prospect that analyst Özgür Ünlü Hısacıklı of the George Marshall Fund says will alarm Moscow. Turkish-made drones played a key role in Azerbaijan's victory last year against the Armenian army over the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh enclave.
The drones that Turkey provided to Azerbaijan were a decisive factor in the battle, and Russia knows this.
Turkey has also, according to analysts, successfully used its drones in Syria and Libya. Ankara is also seeking to cash in on the success of its drones, with reported sales to Ethiopia and Morocco now pending. But analyst Mevlutoglu warns the Ukrainian drone sales pose a significant risk to Turkey.
Turkey has good relations with Russia, especially in energy sector. Russia is building a nuclear power plant in Turkey, and we have cooperation with Russia in Syria. So Turkey has good relations with Moscow. On the other hand, we have very good relations with Ukraine, as evident in the defense sector. In the event of a conflict between Ukraine and Russia, Turkey would find herself in an extremely difficult situation.
But some observers suggest Ankara could see its drone sales to Ukraine as powerful leverage over Moscow in a number of regional disputes that are going on between the two. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
A new People's Tribunal at The Hague is working to secure justice for murdered journalists. Esha Sarai has more.
Whether it's a high-profile killing like that of Jamal Khashoggi or the murder of a local reporter who took on the cartels in Mexico, data from the Committee to Protect Journalists shows that in 81% of cases, no one is held accountable for taking the life of a journalist. A new tribunal at The Hague wants to address the problem.
The A Safer World for the Truth project is opening a people's tribunal. And what that means is a form of grassroots justice. The tribunal is essentially an investigative and grassroots justice mechanism that puts power in the hands of those most affected by these murders.
Families of journalists like Malta's Daphne Caruana Galizia, who was killed in 2017 while investigating corruption, say that pursuing their loved ones' cases helps put a face on the alarming statistics around the murders of journalists worldwide.
Resolving impunity in Daphne's case is really significant for journalist safety generally, because the case is, the situation is so high profile that the case is seen as emblematic of what can and should happen in other cases of impunity. So it is really, really important for us personally as a family to get this right.
While the tribunal won't have the power to call for the arrests of anyone found guilty, press freedom advocates say it's a significant step toward accountability.
It's about embarrassing. It's embarrassment. You know, I think that there's a lot of, it has a lot more power than we give it to when you are naming publicly and out loud a country that is being irresponsible or authorities that have been neglecting a particular investigation.
The tribunal holds its first hearing on November 2nd, the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists, with a focus on cases in Mexico, Syria, and Sri Lanka. Isha Sarai, VOA News.
The World Health Organization warns a shortage of syringes is threatening to upend efforts to vaccinate millions of Africans against COVID-19, a disease that has infected more than 8.4 million people on the continent, killing at least 217,000. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Life-saving vaccines are in short supply in Africa. The World Health Organization says only 6% of Africa's 1.2 billion people are fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. That compares with more than 40% of the people in most high-income countries. Vaccine shipments to the continent are ramping up and expected to increase into next year. While that is encouraging, WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says a scarcity of syringes could paralyze progress.
I mean, just to say, you know, this syringe sounds like a very small item in the big picture of rolling out vaccines. But we know very well if you don't have syringes, you cannot put shots into people's arms. So it's a very important topic. There is a looming threat that syringe supplies will dry up.
The UN Children's Fund ships syringes for the global rollout of vaccines under the COVAX facility. Moeti says UNICEF predicts a global shortage of around 2 billion syringes needed for COVID-19 vaccine and routine immunizations.
Already some African countries like Kenya, Rwanda, and South Africa have experienced delays in receiving vaccines. And unless drastic measures are taken to boost syringe production, Africa faces a crisis.
On a brighter note, Moeti says she's very excited by an announcement from pharmaceutical giant Merck that it will allow other drug makers to produce its new oral antiviral COVID-19 medicine.
Could this be a game changer? We sincerely hope so. We sincerely hope in the context of a global crisis of this nature and looking at the gaps in access and the needs and just the principle of local production, learning from the extremely difficult experience of this pandemic, that more and more pharmaceutical companies would exceptionally be willing to follow Merck's example.
Moeti notes local production of the drug and other COVID-19 therapeutics would help speed up and address inequity and access to key products in poorer nations. She says it would be extremely desirable to have similar patent sharing agreements extended to vaccine production as well. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
An Ethiopian government jet bombed the capital of northern Tigray on Thursday, with one doctor reporting 10 deaths. Video obtained by Reuters shows collapsed brick structures with corrugated iron roofs. Blankets and furniture lay among the wreckage, with charred collapsed beams and a damaged car. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's federal forces have hit Mekelle from the skies at least 8 times in the past 2 weeks, residents say, in a year-long fight against local Tigrayan forces that has killed thousands and uprooted more than 2 million people. Foreign powers are pressing for mediation, and the United States is threatening sanctions to stem a conflict reverberating across the already volatile and impoverished Horn of Africa. Ethiopia's government said Thursday's airstrike hit and destroyed another part of a factory complex that was bombed last week. Ethiopia's forces said the Tigray People's Liberation Front stored military equipment there. But TPLF spokesperson Getachew Reda said the strike hit a residential neighborhood. This is the Voice of America. The U.S. has expressed outrage and demanded an investigation after the Associated Press reported that Myanmar's military has been torturing detainees in a systematic way across the country. The State Department said Friday the reports of torture by the military must be investigated and those responsible held accountable. Tensions are high in parts of India's northeastern Tripura state after a string of attacks against minority Muslims seen as retaliation for the violence against Hindus in neighboring Bangladesh earlier this month. On Friday, state authorities deployed police and paramilitary troops and banned groups of more than 5 people in areas where attacks were reported. Police say at least one mosque, several shops and homes belonging to Muslims have been vandalized since Tuesday. No deaths have been reported. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. So American solar energy companies are calling on the U.S. Commerce Department to expand tariffs on Chinese solar components to include Chinese-linked products for Malaysia, Vietnam, and Thailand. VOA's Michael Sullivan reports on a debate that has divided the solar industry.
American solar installations benefit from U.S. tax incentives and the ability to use cheap components from China, where lower labor costs and fewer environmental restrictions contribute to the lower price tag. Sean Hyatt is a business analyst at the University of Southern California.
They don't have to play by the same rules we have to play by.
Financing is another reason, as Chinese businesses get low-cost loans from state-owned banks, letting them cut prices. Paula Mintz is founder of SPV Market Research.
It starts decades ago with the buildup in China and truly aggressive pricing, and call it dumping if you wanted. They built their industry on aggressive pricing.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump imposed a 30% tariff on Chinese solar imports in 2018. While tariffs have since dropped to 18%, some American manufacturers say they are still needed for now, explains analyst Sean Hyatt.
Until we become competitive enough, we can get in economies of scale to produce at the same cost level and sell at the same price as the Chinese competitors.
In August, 18 solar companies asked U.S. trade officials to expand tariffs to companies in three Southeast Asian nations whose products they say are really made in China. Feng Chi Yu is an engineering professor at Cornell University.
And of course, the fundamental question is that how much of those commodities or goods, you know, the solar panels and modules, are really made in those countries? It's hard to tell.
That's because solar components can be made in one place and assembled somewhere else. Another reason Chinese solar cells are cheaper, much of the polysilicon they use comes from coal-fired plants in western China, where more than 1 million Muslim Uyghurs have been confined in re-education camps. Market analyst Paula Mintz.
About 45-46% of China's polysilicon is produced in Xinjiang with forced labor. I don't think you can get any cheaper than that.
Labor shortages from COVID, power cutbacks in China, and backups at U.S. ports, all creating turbulence in the solar industry. But there is a divide over the tariff issue. Tariffs raise the cost of essential components, says a nonprofit company that makes solar panels in disadvantaged communities. Devin Hartman is president of Chirp Solar Works.
If you're trying to stimulate a resurgence of manufacturing in the United States, but some of the submaterials required have to come from Asia, and if you put onerous tariffs on those materials,
that hurts American manufacturing, he says. Regardless of where the components are made, demand for solar power is growing. Tom McCalmont is president of McCalmont Engineering.
The industry doubles in size about every 3 years.
Because we are a leader, we are an intelligent powerhouse of these new technologies.
Despite the trade dispute, Cornell's Feng Cheng Yu adds, the future of solar power is bright. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Facebook Incorporated said on Thursday it will rebrand as Meta, a name change that underscores its ambitions to refocus the world's largest social network on building the, quote, metaverse, unquote. The rebrand comes as the company battles criticism from lawmakers and regulators over its market power, algorithmic decisions, and the policing of abuse on its platforms. The tech giant said the change would bring together its different apps and technologies under one brand. It said it would not change its corporate structure. The metaverse, a term first coined in dystopian novel 3 decades ago and now attracting buzz in Silicon Valley, refers broadly to the idea of a shared virtual environment that people can access using different devices. The company said in a blog post that it intends to start trading under the new stock ticker it has reserved, MVRS, on December 1st. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a pleasant weekend.